God.
Yeah, still doesn't feel natural.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, the room had just attacked when the meeting started.
I should start. No, so I thought that we might be doing a bit of speech coding because nobody's doing here speech coding. I would like to have some main feedback because, except me, I'm supposed to do some speech coding stuff here with Hinaika, but you know that a little bit at least, that it's based on some, let's say, Hilbert transforms using longer temporal context and deriving some parameters which would be transmitted to the decoder. So it's a little bit different than the stuff which people are using now, which is like RPC based. And but we are at the beginning with everything more or less, so still we can't encode a speech, but of course there are many problems which we still didn't solve. And the biggest one is quite similar to RPC stuff where people still don't know how to exactly encode the carrier or the source signal, you know, what to do with the envelope or how to approximate the envelope, let's say. And you have got...
Maybe... Is the whiteboard working? Or not?
You mean that it would be nice to...
Maybe show us...
Yeah,
just on
the
outline.
Maybe
you
can write
it
on the paper.
Yeah, because you can
write
on
the paper.
So what we are doing now, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, everybody knows RPC stuff, how it works,
right,
so I don't have to present anything more or less. But it's more or less very simple. We have, let's say, at the beginning there is some speech signal. What we are... We might see it in a very simple way that we are using some Hilbert transform at the beginning to create an analytic signal. The analytic signal is the signal which is a complex which you can create from the real some sequence. And if you apply a Hilbert transform on such a speech signal, like real trajectory, then you get a complex signal, and if you take just the amplitude, then you get Hilbert envelope code. So, I don't know, yeah, let's say.
So is this different from the original PLP2 stuff then, is it?
Yeah, it's not PLP2.
Because that's what you started with, wasn't it?
Mm.
This is the stuff that Marius...
No, but Marius is... It's not
this
stuff, not Marius,
it's
actually the Hilbert transform.
Okay.
I know what you mean with the PLP. They are applying PLP with some iteration with this one approach. So
okay.
They were doing some smoothing of a spectrogram
in
two ways.
He was parameterizing it both temporally and across the spectrum.
But PLP is using just the spectral direction, let's say. You're doing for every 20 millisecond processing one feature vector.
Yeah.
You are processing one spectral band, frequency band.
Yeah, okay.
So it's different direction.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is very simple. So applying that absolute operation, you get Hilbert envelope, and of course there is the phase, so it's
mm-hmm.
just a complex operation, and that's more or less all what we are doing. So now what we know is how to approximate that Hilbert envelope. We are applying that Hilbert Marius stuff.
Yeah,
so
that.
He knows
how to
encode the Hilbert envelope.
Some kind of DCT or
like LSS or RPC.
Mm-hmm.
You're applying again some linear prediction model.
Yeah,
after that.
But it's a linear.
It's a different
linear prediction model.
It's
a complex linear.
It's
prediction
a little bit different.
Like
it's not applied in a frequency domain. So instead of classical RPC domain where you have a spectrum, let's say something like that, and you're applying some linear prediction model, which is trying to approximate the spectrum, right? So
yes.
This is frequency. In our case, we are trying to approximate kind of instantaneous energy.
Yeah.
So if this is a time, and you get one frequency band, you can see something like this.
Yeah.
And we are trying to approximate that envelope, which is that Hilbert angle.
Yeah.
Right. So again, we know what to more or less. We know what to do with Hilbert envelope. We know that we can apply their prediction model, and it works pretty well.
Okay.
But if you want to really well reconstruct the speed signal, or
you need the phase.
You need also the phase signal, which is in some sense quite simple for voice speed signal, let's say.
Because
but
you use linear phase or?
The phase, no, it's a phase, or you can even call it like a carrier. So the carrier is, if you know, amplitude modulation, right?
Yeah.
You might see something like there is really one for sine, which is very good.
Same frequency.
Well, it depends on how this is. I mean, you're talking, just the carrier. Okay,
yeah.
So it's not necessarily phase, but if you're using something,
it's
called
like
a sinusoidal coding,
right?
It's
right,
phase.
Right, exactly. So this is the signal that you also have to somehow encode or transmit from a coder to decoder in order to resynthesize it.
Well,
right,
so what sort of bit rate do you get for the encoding of the Hilbert transform, the spectrogram?
What do you mean?
What sort of coding do you get so far?
For this one?
No.
The linear prediction?
Yeah.
Well, it's just a linear prediction. Classical way. I mean. Oh, okay.
Well,
if you want to see it in more details.
No. But what sort of bit rate do you get? Is it? Do you have any sort of idea of what sort of bandwidth?
Oh, you mean.
Mean bit rate?
Yeah, what is bit rate? You mean?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, sure. So. More or less, what we are using now is, let's say, something like 1.2 kilobits per second for the Hilbert envelope.
Okay, and that's with a fully optimized sort of compression scheme, or that's just the raw data?
It's again roughly estimated somewhere,
okay,
but
yeah.
We still know that we can go down.
Yeah, sure. You just cut out fewer
right.
bands and just use interpolation or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We are using
so
like 15 bands.
Okay, this with the full spectrum basically being used.
Right, but they are integrated into 15 bands using classical way like in MFCCs or MPOP. You just apply some those triangular windows
stuff
like that
yeah.
in order to get just 15 bands.
Yeah.
And each band is then processed independently.
Yeah, yeah.
So for one band, we more or less have like 100 bits.
Okay, that's quite good. So
for Hilbert envelope.
And Inet was showing me how scalable it is in terms of you can take half the bands away and still get decent performance.
Right.
You take
you can just
3/4 of them away. It starts
to
degrade, but it's still intelligible
right.
for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's without doing any sort of prediction of what the missing bands might be, right? You just leave them out.
Right. That's what we did.
You could be able to do some sort of code book.
Yeah, sure.
Missing data
sure.
sort of
sure.
stuff.
Yeah. There are many things we didn't try at all, but yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But now what I'm really trying to do is somehow approximate that carrier signal to do something with the carrier. There are many simple things which you can do, like quantization, scalar quantization, for example.
It would be nice to have a scalable scheme, though, wouldn't it? Like, because you've got a nice scalable scheme for the coding of the smooth spectrum.
Right.
It'd be nice to have some sort of scalable coding scheme for the voice signal as well, right?
You mean something like that kelp coding system where you are, or?
Well, I don't know.
What is exactly scalable system? What do you mean?
Well, the different bit rates for the actual excitation as well.
Because
I mean, it'd be nice. Let's say if you have 1,200 bits
for the
smooth spectrum and 1,200 bits for the voice.
But I think this approach can do that because you really can split it into several bands.
Yeah, sure.
And you can decide how many bits you want. More or less.
I have a question. Is the scale linear or is mass scale like in?
This is a bar scale.
It's a bar scale, like
more bar scale. So it's being more wider for higher frequencies, and of course the space.
The overlapping is different, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But what my sense is that it is not so much important still. I mean, it doesn't matter if you use mass scale or bar scale. But
no. Just long as it's some sort of
non-linear. But that's what we are using.
Okay.
Actually, we are using just Gaussian windows here instead of those triangulars, because they are more
smooth.
It's better than for decoding. It's better to play with them because they are not zero anywhere. You know, they are approaching or in limit they are in zero, but actually they are not. So you don't have to care about some zero values here.
Okay.
But more or less, it doesn't matter. Yeah. We are using just Gaussian windows.
Okay.
So after you're doing LSF, so how you're finally
okay, so
encoding
those that you have got envelope is approximated by linear prediction.
Oh.
So you have a piece of chain which you can transcribe into LSFs, which
and then vector quantize.
Right,
whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So first you apply these triangular filters and then do LPC coding, or?
Right, exactly. So first, the approach is quite simple. So at the beginning, we apply DCT in order to get to frequency domain.
Yeah.
Then you apply those triangular or Gaussian windows.
Yeah.
So this is done for 1 second, 8,000 samples for 8 kilohertz sampling frequency, right? So for such DCT trajectory, you apply those Gaussian windows. And then, so you split into frequency subbands, and then each one frequency subband is more or less.
Again, you do the LP analysis on each
right,
subband.
Yeah. Right, exactly. You just apply LP, so autocorrelation, let's say, or you can do power spectrum, whatever.
Yeah,
so you, for each one, you get LSFs here.
Yeah, okay. So, how many LSFs you're using?
I'm using now like 20 LSFs per 1 second. Per one frequency band.
So but you, how many bands you're using?
20 times 15. 15, isn't it?
You're not skipping any bands?
No. If I just skip
15 to 40, then.
So 20 LSFs, each one is quantized by 4 or 5 bits.
Okay. So it's 300.
Of what? 300
I
bits?
Mean, it's a total of 300 sort of parameters per second.
Yeah.
But phase you're not
right.
encoding anything, phase you're directly transmitting.
You mean this phase, the Hilbert carrier, or?
Yeah. The phase of Hilbert.
You're not carrying, transmitting that at all, really, at this point in time, yeah.
You're not transmitting at all.
Well, there are many things you can do. What you can already do is just to replace it by Gaussian noise.
No.
So you can already use, like in a
whispering type.
Or you can replace it by some cosine, one cosine generated in a central frequency of that Gaussian window.
Or one of these glottal pulse things, and just use basic LPC 10 style.
Right.
Yeah. Which is probably, I mean, if you were going to aim for like a very low rate code of like 500 bits per second, I guess that's probably fine.
So what is the standard milliamps? 2 kilobits per second?
The lowest standard is MELP, I think. Which is 2400. It's been implemented at 1200 bits per second using more complicated quantization schemes and stuff like that.
1200?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
I saw they used matrix quantization on the LP on the LSF parameters or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean that's quite, it becomes quite computationally
sensitive.
But I mean I imagine the same sort of approach would be.
Well, I'm just comparing it with LPC 10 standard, which is like classical LPC. A bit optimized, so there is I think 2.4 kilobits per second to bit rate for that.
Yeah, that's the same. 20 MELP's a lot better quality though.
Yeah, definitely.
But this is codex, right?
This
so
is
you have codex.
No,
so
I mean LPC 10 is just LPC.
Oh, it's not codex.
No.
I think.
Just noise or just
think,
those impulses.
I think SELP or KELP or however you pronounce it. It's about 4800, I think.
Yeah, it's around 1 kilobyte.
Yeah.
For the standard 4800.
Yeah.
4.8
or something.
That's I think even GSM and all these G729.
Or based around that.
Yeah. On this
right,
one.
Yeah.
At least it gives.
It's not terribly interesting, really.
But still, there is code book, no? So that's maybe better than like using. Just
You've got a bunch of options, haven't you? You can use like a code excited, or you could use a.
Well, more or less, what we didn't do is analyze by synthesis, right? So that's what
SELP
is doing, right? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, so this is what we already didn't do, and that might help a lot, of course.
Yeah, but what's more interesting?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's the question.
I suspect of something like SELP, you're going to get a lot higher bandwidth, aren't you? I mean, it's a high bandwidth standard.
It's really
sure.
For example, what I also did was a simple bit picking algorithm. So if you take a look on the spectrum of that carrier signal, which is more or less like the cosine, if you really take a look on it, but it is kind of frequency shifted cosine or frequency modulated cosine.
Okay.
Right. So the frequency seems to be changing.
Yeah.
Of course, the amplitude is not constant all the time. It should be theoretically, but frankly, it's not. So what you can see for 1 second signal, you more or less you really might see some like one impulse there or spectral line for.
Okay.
But usually there are many others which are quite small, but they are quite important. If you don't transmit them, then the signal is quite robotic or something like that. So if you really transmit just one spectral line. But this is what you can do, and you can understand pretty well. The signal is audible or.
Okay, so.
If you really just find one line, one spectrum, the dominant one in the spectrum of the carrier, Hilbert carrier, and you just transmit this parameter.
Because it's a bit tricky, isn't it? It's not like a standard. I'm just thinking, what sort of option? It's not like you can't just do standard. You know, inverse filtering for reconstruction or anything like that, can you?
It's even easier because what you have to do is just divide the. You just multiply that Hilbert envelope by the Hilbert carrier. That's all.
Oh, okay. Then you just do the inverse FFT or whatever. Okay. Yeah.
So you just multiply that one Hilbert carrier, which is transferred by LSS, by that this one IFFT signal. So.
But that's going to be susceptible to having phase problems, is that? When you.
Oh, you mean the phase of that. Carrier
output signal.
Of course, I tried to play also with that, and I found that it doesn't matter so much what is the phase, because we are using just 1 second window, right?
Okay.
So of course there might be some disturb when you concatenate those segments together, but. Then the phase might be important.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I didn't find anything important with the phase. Like, great, keep the phase zero and it works. Or
and there is research that's been published showing, speech reconstruction from the essentially the spectrogram without phase information.
Right.
Yeah.
So. But it's again a little bit different because they are doing this in a frequency domain.
Yes.
But this is some time domain.
Yes, but you can reconstruct the entire
the spectrogram.
Spectrogram from that, can't you?
Yeah.
So you could do it that way.
Because
I'm just thinking, there's heaps of options. Like if you'd be exactly the same as sinusoidal coding or something like that.
Right.
All you need is the reconstruction of the spectrogram in order to estimate the harmonic amplitudes.
Exactly. What we can also do very simply is just to get the magnitude spectrogram using this approximation without a carrier, just Hilbert envelope.
Yeah.
But you just get it in this way, in the way of Rouse, right? But you can also get the short time Fourier transform
just by refitting.
Right. Just classical frame by frame algorithm, 20 milliseconds. But you keep just the faces instead of magnitudes. And you can put this together.
Okay.
Right. And it works pretty well, then the signal is not just whispered, and you really hear that there is the voiceness in the signal. But of course, the quality is not so good still, but you can use it for like 2-3 kilobits per second, and it works.
Yeah, but that's the big thing at the moment, isn't it? If the encoding rate's 2 kilobits per second for the excitation component of the signal. It doesn't matter how efficient your encoding of the spectrogram is, you're always going to have a relatively high bit rate.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, so maybe it would be nice if you'd so what you did with the speech coding. I didn't see any of PhD thesis of you, I think, so if you did something. So maybe it would be interesting at least.
Well, one could argue it's a field that's quite a sort of a niche these days, isn't it?
But it's more towards industry.
In standard, so.
Yeah, because I worked in the industry for like a small time, but they used to implement all these coders, GSM and ITU standards.
So you were, when did you do that?
No, just before my PhD. I had for like 3 months.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but that's like industry, it's really a big deal. Like, so they work on a lot of these standards.
I think so, yeah.
Well, did you say?
But mostly they're all based on self-friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Nokia is being sued in the US for their tri-band usage.
You mean using that CDMA?
GSM doesn't have GSM in the US, or they didn't have GSM in the US.
Yeah, it's not GSM, right? It's
CDMA.
CDMA is another level, I think.
No, but CDMA is there, but now slowly they're introducing GSM also. No?
Well, that's tri-bands.
Yeah, GSM tri-band. The frequencies are different.
Yeah, and apparently Nokia's in a bit of trouble over that one. But,
Yeah, you know, it's really big.
I think there is a lot of money in this.
It should have been a lawyer.
Like speech recognition, of course, it's very interesting, but people don't use it so much as just coding, just telephoning, right?
I mean, coding is a much more sort of
standard.
It boils down to just mathematics to a large extent, doesn't it? It's just a sort of communications.
Right.
So where do you think your thing is useful, in CDMA or GSM?
No, I
think maybe
it's
CDMA, maybe.
Well, CDMA, I mean, there
more
is
time domain that they're doing only.
Well, the problem is this with this application, or it doesn't have to be problem, but one constraint is that we are processing 1 second of the signal. You can go down, of course, but then you are losing a little bit of the bit rate.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, but there are many applications where you really can use it because you don't care about algorithmic delay, 1 second algorithmic delay, like for, I don't know, if instead of SMS, you can already have some other channel.
Yeah, sure.
Where
push
you just
talk and stuff like that. Yeah.
So.
And I mean, as you say, I mean, that delay is, I mean, you can squash that delay to some extent.
Right.
I think as far as the delayless coding goes, I don't think you can probably do much more than what's already been achieved, because to get higher compression, you have to, you know, take advantage of redundancy over longer time spans. So.
But you've already seen this long length. Telephones, they already have delay, no? At least half a second.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, that's transmission delay, not algorithmic delay. If you add those
together,
you end up with a nightmare scenario.
But mobile.
We might have someone else joining in on our meeting soon. I don't know, I mean, you tried sinusoidal coding based approaches, didn't you?
Which one?
Sinusoidal coding.
Well, but the sinusoidal coding is usually. And at least what I think or what I know is when you are doing sinusoidal coding, it means you just take the speech signal at the beginning, right? And you are trying to
harmonics and
find the harmonics in a temporal domain, right?
The thing is, you need part of the parameter set for that is the harmonic amplitudes.
Right.
Now, one way of compressing the harmonic amplitudes is just storing a smooth spectrum, and then you can just pick the harmonic amplitude on that spectrum when you reconstruct.
Right.
On that smooth version of the spectrum.
More or less, I did it. Maybe different way, but
kind
of algorithm like trying to find out the strongest or the most dominant peaks in the spectrum.
Maybe you can try to reduce.
Well, I mean, you can use as many harmonics as you want. I mean, he was just using the fundamental frequency.
Right.
And if you're doing a smooth spectrum representation of the harmonic amplitudes, then you only need to store the fundamental frequency,
right.
And then all these
and the maximum voice frequency, and everything
and
else
then
can
do
be
logicals of
So and then but then the only tricky thing that we hadn't figured out was the phase information. But you can still get if you do phase unwrapping and all of these other tricks, you end up with some sort of phase representation, which is
some sort of
monotonically decreasing.
Yeah.
If it is unwrapped, you mean.
So I mean, it's something that you could conceivably represent in some sort of
some function,
low bit rate representation, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
And then maybe you'd need some sort of correction to correct minor phase discontinuities at some point in time.
I also play with that. And for example, what I found it, well, in this case, we are not trying to encode the speech signal. We are trying to encode some carrier, which is much easier, I would say.
Yeah,
you can see it.
Yeah, okay.
So, where I was trying to encode the phases, so I just found that 2 bits is enough for that, and you really don't hear the difference.
Okay.
So if you keep all the spectral lines
yeah.
as they were there,
yeah.
but you are just quantizing with 2 bits or 3 bits for amplitude, 2 bits for full phase, so it's okay.
Okay.
The problem is that you have to transmit many of them.
Yeah,
because
sure.
there is not just one dominant component, but usually more others which are quite small.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or what you have to do then, you have to decrease
the
size of not 1 second, but you have to go down, because then you can get just voice part and a noise part. You know,
yeah.
1 second is usually mixed, right, somehow together.
But you don't do any voice on voice decision.
No, no, no.
No,
and that's an advantage, I think.
You
for
want to avoid
situation.
Hard choices.
Yeah.
And we don't want to do that. Yeah,
because in science
tricky.
Model modeling, it's really another issue. Like
well, that's one of the big problems with
yeah.
the PC
yeah.
10
yeah.
frames.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It,
yeah.
it stinks because this hard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have to combine all these
right.
harmonic model and noise model. So again, you may end up some joining.
But for example, what we also found is that if you use just the helper envelope, that one which is trying to approximate that instantaneous energy in some low band, like around 200 hertz, and you take a look on the signal, on the trajectory, you can see that it works like kind of voice detector.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
sure.
Because for low energies, there is usually noise.
Yeah.
For high energies, there is kind of harmonicity.
Yeah.
So it works
yeah.
pretty well for that. So we might use this one.
But
information
that 200. This is what they use. Like they do use this for.
Yeah, I think so.
For
yeah.
Pitch marking.
Mm-hmm.
In speech. So this is what Alan Black's code uses. But
mm-hmm.
it's very speaker dependent on what sort of bandwidth you look at this Hilbert envelope.
Right. Uh-huh.
Depending on the pitch, depending on the person,
mm-hmm.
you get a different amount of smoothing at a certain sort of.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if it's a female speaker, for instance,
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
why you have to tune a lot of parameters. So
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That's a problem. Sure.
But you know, you don't really need hard decisions, no, like voice to voice. So maybe it may help.
That
but
nice not to have anything like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, but from memory, that basic script that they had wasn't very
yeah.
effective. I mean, maybe if you did some sort of initial first guess and then.
Right.
And then chose your smoothing factor based on that. Because,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, selecting at any particular point of what the pitch is at the point is maybe inaccurate, but if you
mm-hmm.
estimated it over a second, you should be able to get a decent
right.
estimate.
Exactly.
But do you really need it, or like,
well, I don't know. Maybe if we really
yeah,
want to improve the quality,
yeah.
then we will need it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So.
But it's not really, you don't need to specify at each point. It's voice.
Not now. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna have a time next month or in 3 weeks. So I'll try to play something there.
Yeah.
Well,
it'd be nice to really see what you're actually trying to reconstruct here.
What we are trying to
this carrier signal. What it really.
How does it look like?
Yeah. And you did say it looks like a frequency modulated
yeah,
cosine.
Yeah.
It's
kind of not frequency, let's say amplitude modulation, where you have just the carrier and that modulation
and
signal. Right?
But you're changing even frequency is also shifting, right?
Well, it
yeah.
has to be because
yeah.
shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
So then, yeah, then it's not exactly amplitude modulation. So
yeah, yeah.
It's in between.
It's in between. So it's not this or that, but
yeah.
still, yeah. But anyway, what also the other approach, which is possible to use, the other is one to keep the phase like this one, two spectrograms, one the phase, one the magnitude.
Yeah.
And, well, I can again play it, and it works on 2 kilobits per second.
That's what Marius did, no? But he was keeping all the phase in.
No, what he was doing, he was using the force speech recognition, what I...
No, but even his
code,
he just... He didn't do anything, he just transmitted. That's what he was aiming for...
Speech coding, I mean?
He's not really kind of doing speech coding, but he wants to do it on music, so he doesn't really care about the bandwidth, so he wants to have the quality.
I don't know.
Yeah, but even, especially the audio
okay.
CDs, and that's why he was telling, like, yeah, at least even 10 kbit, 20 kilobits also is okay.
Right, yeah.
But he's not touching phase at all, I think. He's just transmitting all the phase and then...
Mm-hmm. Well, for
but
example,
he's encoding the envelope, yeah.
Right, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, I think so. There are more papers which are using this approach, like
yeah.
trying to encode the magnitude spectrum.
And then leaving the phase.
Leaving the phase, or you just really can, again, the phase can be replaced by the noise, which is pretty good. So that's the bandwidth variable approach. So if you really don't have a bandwidth, you just can replace it by noise and it works. Of course, then it doesn't sound as the original because it's more whispered or whatever, but you can understand well. And for example, if you mentioned this one, I probably did the trajectory of the face under face trajectory. I also use because you can do it here when you get into this domain where you apply or you're trying to compute power spectrum. Let's say that this kind of trajectory, it doesn't fit this in frequency or time domain, but here you are trying to compute to do linear prediction. So you're just doing FFT, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then applying power in order to get to power domain and then IFFT, right?
Yeah.
So you get the autocorrelation
coefficient.
So before you're applying power spectrum, you can again get the, you have
yeah,
the complex
get the
frequency
yeah.
or complex spectrum, you can get the phase, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
And the phase look quite similar like this, so you might see it is
yeah,
more or less like a line.
Yeah, and it does start to get a little bit
right.
Non-linear towards the end, but normally that's
yeah.
that's when the components are not actually probably going to be audible anyway, and vice versa, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
But this phase is different from your carrier.
Yeah,
like
it is very different. Yeah.
Because you're
then
just doing on your.
You're doing in different domain.
Yeah.
This
and also like
domain, this entire domain, and it is
yeah,
quite
yeah.
it's quite sensible to any quantization. What I found really, it looks like the line. So you just say, okay, let's put the line there,
yeah.
but it doesn't work. Well, you can understand, but.
Yeah, sure.
You can hear that there are many
because any sort of error in
yeah,
that line
exactly.
is transmitted is realized in the net as a
right,
phasor.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
And the other problem is that it's not bandwidth variable, so you cannot say that this part will be the total noise,
mm-hmm.
which you can do in here in this process. So that's why I didn't play with that some more because
okay.
I found there more disadvantages features than the other features this approach. So that's why.
But even you can use it, can you use that phase directly?
You mean this one?
Yeah, this
yeah,
one
if
is
you take just the original phase and.
But this is phase of your spectrum, like it's not two
right.
time.
Yeah, it's not a phase.
Of your signal, it's not.
Yeah.
So then it's
phase.
Tricky, like how.
No, you can again put that envelope with this phase together. Because
but still, you get only the magnitude of your Hilbert envelope.
You get the.
Phase slices like.
Yeah, you get the complex spectrum with this.
No, but you started with Hilbert envelope, no? Like magnitude
no,
of Hilbert.
No, I started with DCT.
No, before DCT, you're.
After DCT, you're trying. This is a kind of, again, a real trajectory, right? And you're trying to first find the Hilbert envelope, so as.
So you put the DCT is the speech or like your.
This is a speech.
Okay, this is starting.
No, but here what I want to say is really that. It's not part of Hilbert envelope, it's part of the DCT signal. So
yeah, maybe then
it's enough. If you have just this phase and the Hilbert envelope, you can put it together.
Okay.
You don't need the carrier. I mean this is kind of carrier signal but in different domain represented.
Yeah. It's in frequency domain.
Right. So what I think is that we really need to apply this kind of analysis by synthesis approach in order to.
Yeah, that makes sense because it's a time domain sort of
right.
approach. In fact, that's what you're doing is so different to most approaches to speech coding that it doesn't matter that we don't know much about.
No!
It's quite different to a lot of the traditional sort of source filter type. Approaches or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's maybe even the advantage here because it's not speech based, which means
it's just a matter of minimum distortion time.
Right. So you can, when I tried and compared with LPC-10 on a twice bigger or higher bitrate, this works better. It seems to me just for unvoiced speech. I'm not. Mentioning voices because that's unvoiced.
Unvoiced speech is very difficult to sort of judge quality compared to
yeah, but when you hear and try to hear some examples with the music, for example.
Yeah, plosives are very important, yeah. I guess.
Right, yeah.
So maybe it does a better job of plosives.
Mm-hmm. It's true, yeah. It seemed to me pretty good.
Okay. It'd be nice if we had some demos.
That's true.
I suppose I have to wait till your time, I guess.
So when's your 10?
I should be 13 December.
Oh,
I just you want me here.
No. You'll practice it before then, Mike.
Okay. No, I just swapped it with Mike Perro, I think, because he's not going to be here.
Yeah, he's going to us.
And
yeah.
I was supposed to have it in January, so whatever. Anyway, so. But anyway, I wanted to hear something maybe from you, what you were doing with speech coding, because you mentioned that.
I did, yeah, but we're doing a more traditional frequency slices rather than temporal based
stuff. But it was based on, like, you were using kind of recognizer there, right?
Yeah, well, that was one of the approaches, sure. Yeah. And the other approach was this HMM based stuff, which is basically just a parameterization of the, you know, the source filter type parameters,
uh-huh.
and then learning the, you know, training
right.
like a speech recognition system, but that's not terribly, that's got no relationship to this.
Yeah, it's different, but speech coding at least.
Yeah, sure, speech coding. I read some of the other techniques, or standards, but I mean, I think you're on the right track with that analysis by synthesis, but that doesn't tell you what sort of bit rates you're going to achieve, or
right, yeah, sure.
And because you have to do it separately for each
band,
mm-hmm.
right?
It would be I imagine that's the tricky part. Because it would be varying quite rapidly, wouldn't it? Your codebook, like you're within each
with different
when you go along the 1 second. Sort of segment of the band.
Maybe what we can already do is to decrease this distance. We can do a Hilbert envelope approximation with 1 second, but then we can split the signal into, I don't know, 10 segments with 100 milliseconds or even less, and we can apply some error technique for that. You know?
Well, I mean, yeah, first you've got to choose your approach and not worry about the bandwidth.
Right,
and
exactly.
then start thinking about how to given, because I mean, I guess, especially because this is a more of a commercial based project, you've got to match the quality before you start worrying about other things, right? I mean, what sort of
more or less they don't care what will be the quality or the bitrate. They just want to get something new, really.
Oh, okay.
So if you get a very low bitrate with reasonable quality or very high bitrate. Which is again different, but with high quality, they will be happy with the both.
Okay.
So, on one side it's pretty good, but on the other you don't know which way you should go.
Sure.
And
at the moment you're at sort of a point where maybe you have to make that choice a little
right,
bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there we go. Do you want to mention your speech coding experiments?
No.
So you were saying that you're doing something in India with
but it's mostly like this SELP and this.
Do you know the SELP like?
No, I was doing some like writing some code for testing and these things. So I'm meeting some standards.
Yeah.
For that. So there are like the thing. These standards, how it works, is like they give all the pseudo code kind of thing, and then they put severe test conditions. So you have to pass those test conditions. Like, you can say, okay, we implemented this and
although standards, depending on what standard you're dealing with, sometimes it can be quite ambiguous, right? I mean, the latest MPEG standards are basically this is the container. We don't care how you do it, right? But it's got to fit inside this.
Right.
Even the standards, they give the test signals also. You can't really do it on whatever database you have.
Okay. And then
you have to
you have to do NOS testing.
It's more like they define. So I did for some, even Echo Cancer also. There also they define what is the overlap speech condition. Everything they define. So
okay.
You need to follow all those.
I see.
Yes, this industry is again differently.
Yeah, but it's quite interesting with even with current speech coding technologies. They are still trying to use SELP or those LP.
Yeah, I think they're using only SELP.
There is nothing new, more or less.
When I was
listening the talk of Milan Jelinek, he's the Czech guy, but he lives in Canada. I don't know the name of the university, but they have the button, I think, for Kelp, even for.
Okay.
Kelp is from AT&T.
I don't know how it is exactly, but they got very famous for this, for that cell. What they did exactly, I don't know, if something different a little bit or not, or they just keep those patterns, or
okay.
I don't know how it is exactly. Maybe he never know much more, but when I heard those the presentation, they didn't do so much new. I mean, it was last year, and I think he was asking, so what's new that you are so famous with that? And they said, okay, we know exactly how to do that. I mean, you know, not to make any errors, like in because everybody knows how to do that, but it's not so easy to implement it, right?
No.
There is nothing so much new. Really.
Yeah, there's the
what's new is in the transmission medium, like
you know,
new like higher bandwidth transmission or like packetized based transmission and all that sort of thing, where they're not so much looking at the algorithm, but so much as how do we incorporate the algorithm within a new transmission sort of medium? Basically, so, like, I mean, if you see a lot of papers on like voice over IP or whatever, the publications are sort of like, how do we deal with packet loss, or how is it affected by packet loss?
Exactly.
And
but then they are still using like error signal, which is going to be approximated by codebook, right?
Yeah, sure.
And linear prediction, which is used, which is approximated in just spectrum. For months and everything that's all. So.
And again, a lot of this stuff, like where even when I was working mostly, the company was developing for voice over IP, so they have to put all these things on again DSPs, and also it's mostly up to how many LPCs are,
the code and
how many
stuff.
It's still optimization, and then.
And even that's less of a big deal now, right? Because all
Again, now even they're also becoming even the memories are not really.
Not really. You can throw MATLAB on a mobile phone these days.
So even I think then you can have whatever bandwidth is. It's not really.
Well, I hope that we still have a lot of time for that because.
But no, I think. But still, then that's what maybe people are going towards science sort of modeling. At least before, then bandwidth conditions were really stringent, then they will use all the LPC based.
For example, when I was, you know, harmonic noise modeling, that H&M system, which is used for synthesis, you know, it's pretty interesting. I mean,
it's good.
If you want, you can look at his code and
but
only
his code implemented. So
it
wasn't perfect. There was a little bit of bugs with some of the phase matching, but it was pretty hard to tell that it was not perfect unless you heard the samples sort of next to one another, so that's not too bad.
But definitely, it's better than coded speech. Definitely.
Oh, sure,
really.
And I mean,
how much you can get compressed speech? Like what you're telling is you can do all these tricks. Like,
the only trick is the phase, and we've got a student starting in January who's going to start working on how to actually efficiently parameterize the.
In sinusoidal modeling.
And I think we've got a number of ideas for the spectrum. It's easily enough handled just using standard techniques. But
anyway, do you know exactly how it is done when you really have those MSC coefficients, which means magnitude spectrum, and then you are trying to reconcile the speech
without phase?
Without the phase.
I've got no idea.
I reviewed one paper. Like,
that's
a little
too confused about it.
Maybe you can look at it from University of
Which
one?
University of East Anglia.
University of East Anglia.
It's near, sort of. It's near the sort of Cambridge side of it.
I can follow you. They're doing a lot of tricks there. Like they're again training Gaussian mixers for different frequencies, and then.
But some algorithms are quite.
Much more mathematical.
I think.
Just basically doing a search through or stuff like that, don't they?
Those things are again based on LPC, no?
It seems to me, something like that.
Because like the pitch estimation in X waves or these things,
they're
all
do
dynamic programming based on, again, LPC analysis.
What you can do is take just the minimum phase of which you can get from linear prediction, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean, minimum phase signal.
And then construct.
Yeah.
And it sounds quite reasonable that you can, but of course, still, it's not original at all. So, I don't know how they do that exactly.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, again, like, no, the problem is different for everybody. Like, these guys were they're doing for distributed speech recognition mainly.
Yeah, right. Sure. Well, you've only got the MSCCs.
So.
I think it was to do with Aurora or something?
CTSA or something, European standard.
For,
okay.
For Aurora, we didn't do anything.
I mean, even it's kind of Aurora framework, so.
Yeah,
okay.
But
yeah.
We didn't do any speech recognition.
No, but now it's a bit for.
Yeah.
It
was for, say you've got someone who has, you know, they want to dispute that this is what they actually said
right.
by the recognition, and the recognition network was wrong, and you owe me money, or whatever. And then they can say, well, we've reconstructed your speech from the speech input to the speech recognizer. Hey, voila, it sounds like you. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot of sort of, well,
right.
does the quality stand up
right.
to legal sort of
right.
requirements or whatever. But
even at this point, they're planning to use for standard GSM or it's not that?
I know, there's a separate set of standards, I
yeah.
think, for speech
yeah.
recognition.
ETS,
which I think requires, you know, the states the information they can send is this. So I don't know if you can actually tack on any extra phase. You have to deal with what you're given. So.
Yeah. yeah, all these standards are really.
yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting. Maybe that's the best approach to look with. As to begin with, is just pretend all you have got is.
You mean with this phrase?
Yeah.
Sure.
Because you can also interpolate the pitch information from the spectrum as well.
Yeah, they do some.
They do that.
Kind of reconstruction of pitch.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe try to see how good you can go without transmitting any
right.
of that information.
But the quality again,
the pitch was really good. I thought I didn't think you could really.
No, the again European standards. What they give is they give the MFCCs and they give the pitch.
Yeah.
Then you have to construct the thing.
Yeah.
But if you have MFCCs, then like again you have to get the higher order MFCCs and then.
Yeah, but the
then
thing is, if it's mel scaled, if you have a mel scale, you get quite fine reconstruction of the spectrum at the lower frequencies, which is what you
yeah.
need for reconstruction of the pitch anyway.
Right.
So I mean, if you wanted to transmit with fewer bands, you'd maybe still keep the lower bands, or
yeah.
or maybe you could still transmit the pitch. It's not a big deal, but
yeah.
it'd be nice if
yeah.
you didn't, because then I mean that's well, I mean it's worth giving it a go, and I mean maybe seeing well, what information you can add to the data stream to improve
mm-hmm.
performance.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
So how about you?
I've never done any coding in my life, so I just one curiosity. So this is coding. Then you code the speech, then you are supposed to transmit the speech, right?
Yeah.
Let's say in GSM or something else.
Yeah.
I remember when I was doing some image processing, there were techniques for compressing and then coding, so adding channel information from the image at the same time in order to save some bits.
You mean like
I mean?
Channel and source coding together?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if there's someone was doing it with speech as
well. I can imagine kind of like JPEG operations, which might be almost like source coding and maybe also channel coding because you just smooth.
Well, actually, when you compress, first you compress the signal, right? And then you add some complexity
right,
to the signal in order to recover the error.
Right.
So I was wondering if, by any chance, there was something like this in speech, with the speech.
I don't know.
You know?
Okay. I don't know so much about channel coding, like those Hofmann coding stuff.
It's
just
standard. It's not the most difficult.
Yeah, sure. That's where I stopped. Run length of coding, I'm out of here.
But I think again, it's different, no? Like these standards again, all these JSON standards.
Yeah,
maybe they have
exactly.
the compression standards and again,
yeah.
sure.
coding standards. But maybe I
and this was the problem actually, because
yeah.
you were.
I don't remember anything like they're doing combined.
Not in GSM, definitely.
Even normal G17 and normal speech coding. So they have the speech coding
okay.
standards again. They have the channel coding.
Then
standards.
They have some.
Switch.
Source. So
yeah.
Okay. Just
I mean, I think they do try to. I mean, obviously the techniques they choose are supposed to be less you know, susceptible to coding.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, but I mean, that's maybe the limit to that.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you find some good paper which you made.
Yeah, I told you, no, that please.
That was the name.
Bending the Miller, like, yeah, you can say it's
prototyping or.
No, waveform prototyping is different. I was suggesting like this. But that's again totally. Did you hear the Bastian Klein's? You know, rip. No, he's really fun guy in speech coding like this. He proposed one prototype waveform.
Okay.
Like they take the signal and then they project it to two dimensional and then they take the faces. And it's like prototypes, kind of wavelets you can see, like,
okay.
But it's not exactly wavelets. So they take slow moving waveforms, slow moving signal,
yeah,
and like fast moving, and then they combine. So it's like. So you project signal into two-dimensional space and then separate the slow-moving parts and fast-moving parts.
Kind of capstone or something like that?
No, this is like, they
yeah,
call
yeah,
prototype.
It's,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, it's...
Sounds a bit that way, doesn't it?
So now people mostly use it for like residual and coding. So even suppose
yeah.
if you have the LPC, then you can use this technique for residual
compression. Oh, that's quite
compression.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So...
It'll be good for me.
Yeah, you can really get good qualities with fourth loop.
So that was the waveform coding which you gave me, the prototype coding
yeah.
paper.
Yeah. But did yeah. So people can use at waveform level or at residual level. So if you're using LPC, you can use at residual level. You can see residual as
right.
some signal. So it's really so in residual, you can clearly see whether it's fast moving.
Yeah.
See all these points.